My name's Mark Devlin. I'm a former club and radio DJ. I still do a bit of it, but for the last 10 years, I've been on a completely different path, which is researching what's really going on in this world. A lot of people would refer to it as truth conspiracy type issues. This led to the publication of two books called Musical Truth, Volumes 1 and 2. And my special interest was coming to understand how the corporate music industry has been used for various nefarious aims over the decades.
Okay, so look, before we talk about your red pill moment, which sounds like an interesting thing in itself, can you just tell us about your days DJing and radio DJing? Where and when?
Well, all over the place, really, to be honest. I started in 1990, but I really got going in 1996. I got a radio show on Galaxy Radio in Bristol, in your neck of the woods. And that really kind of springboarded my career. Got a lot of club gigs in Bristol. And then I did a big one called The Forum in Cardiff, a night called Late Night Flavour. This was around 97, 98, 99, which were really the golden years for me in my career. And I was fortunate enough to DJ all over the UK and in many different countries. I've played in over 40 different countries. So that was my main career for a little over 20 years. I pretty much gave all that up in 2014 and really scaled back the number of gigs. But I had a really great time, had a real blast during the glory years, especially during the years when I didn't know what I know now. And I was blissfully ignorant and naive and just wallowing in normie land, you know,
just the norms. We used to call them the norm swarm, but in a way, you know, of course, most people, you've got to be very, very sympathetic, because most people just simply don't have the time to go in depth into stuff, and that's part of the game, is that people's time is all taken up. But anyway, can you tell us about your, you know, as a successful DJ, radio DJ, what was your red pill moment then, Mark?
Well, that came, it all kind of coalesced and came together for me in 2010. But there'd been a preparatory period from about 2007 when I'd started reading the books of David Icke, and I was put onto them by my dad, because my dad's always been an alternative thinker. He sits there late at night in his armchair with a pile of about 20 books next to him and just absorbs all this stuff. And he often used to speak to me about the stuff he was reading about. And he put me on to David Icke. And at the time, I thought the same as most people in Britain did of David Icke, because of the way we've been entrained and conditioned to think of him, which was that the poor man had lost his mind and he was a nutter. But I gave the books a chance and I started to read them, and I realized that he was making a whole load of sense. And actually, what he was writing was answering so many of the big questions that I'd had in life up to that point. And you know, so many things made sense for the first time. And really, it all came together for me in 2010. It's just like something clicked and the final piece of the jigsaw puzzle was put in place. And I could see everything so clearly then. So it seems like I had a 10-year lead-in to 2020 for what's going on now. I had a decade's worth of grounding so that I'd be ready for this and, you know, equipped to deal with what's going on.
Yeah, but what was the final piece of the jigsaw? What was that moment where you just thought, crikey, that's it. That's the red pill. There's no going back now.
Well, I can't remember any specific element of the story. I just remember it was September 2010 and I'd gone on a trip to New York, and I was at Niagara Falls as well, staying in Buffalo. And I had time to read David Icke's latest book because I was so busy at the time doing DJ gigs and such. Didn't ordinarily get that time. But on this particular trip, I did. And I just remember in September 2010, it's like a light bulb went on in my head and I was like, ah, now I understand. Now it all makes sense. Just the way the world is run and the way that it's not governments that are in charge of countries. They answer to higher ups. There's a hierarchy there and there's hidden powers that we aren't supposed to know about, but we can if we do the research. And that all just became apparent to me.
Okay, well, Icke, what about the lizard thing? Because there's a lot of criticism of him, I think quite legitimate, saying, well, this discredits the other things that he's talking about.
Well, that's right. That's what people say the whole time. That was one aspect of his work that I couldn't entirely get with. I tried to take it on board, but it didn't really resonate. And when he started talking about the moon being an artificial construct like a spaceship, that didn't vibe with me at all. and particularly in recent years, where I've come to some more understandings about the true nature of the sun and moon, which is that they're luminaries, lights in the sky. They're not solid objects that you can land a rocket on. Not that I ever went for the Apollo moon landings either. But yeah, I mean, I don't go for the entire body of David Icke's work, but most of what he talks about makes a whole load of sense, and it also tallies with what so many other researchers have put out there. And I feel in 2020, he's been doing great work exposing this COVID-19 scam, and I can't really fault the information he's been putting out this year. So,
well,
I think it's a case of,
because he's been talking about the virus not existing, hasn't he? Now, this has got up the noses of a lot of people who have lost loved ones, for example.
Well, I don't know if the virus exists or not. You know, there's a strong argument for this being a particularly virulent strain of the flu that is being experienced. And, you know, we don't know for sure that there is such a thing as COVID-19. People are saying that it's not been isolated. It's not passed the Koch postulate test to prove its existence.
Okay, so let me just stop you right there, Mark, because back at the tail end, the last couple of days of January 2020, the Chinese released the genome because they were having problems in Wuhan, and they obviously were thinking to themselves, hang on, we need the world's virologists to get a good old look at this thing, see what it is. And so although maybe that hasn't been publicized much in the West, certainly much of the international press has, and particularly in Southeast Asia, has fixed on that and saying, well, there it is. It's been published, the actual gene sequences of the virus.
Right. Well, I've not seen that. So even if there is a virus, the point is it's affecting so few people, and the death rate is just so minute compared to the overall population that clearly the reaction to it is out of all proportion.
Okay,
there have got to be ulterior motives.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I think you're absolutely right. There's been a massive overreaction, particularly after the pandemic's finished. The idea, it seems to be, to kind of keep it all going on. So what do you think's the agenda behind all this?
Well, it seems to be a fast tracking of what the so-called elites, elite ruling class, have wanted to bring in for so long, which is tied to Agenda 2030 coming out of the United Nations, absolute control and subjugation of all of humanity.
Okay, so what is Agenda 2030?
It's an idea, a concept for complete top-down control of human societies and a restructuring of the way that we live. Is very tied to what they refer to as human settlement zones, which involves these futuristic smart cities that they want everyone living in, which are going to be controlled by AI and closely linked to facial recognition and social credit systems, similar to what we've seen coming out of China. And a lot of it is being achieved under the guise of environmental issues. It's closely tied with what was happening last year with Greta Thunberg being wheeled out and talking about all these ecological problems that the Earth is facing if something isn't done. That's been used as justification for restructuring everything. And it's been really fast-tracked with this whole COVID narrative. It just ticks so many boxes on what they've wanted to introduce for so long. A cashless society would be one. We've seen the demonization of cash with this ridiculous idea that this virus can somehow live on banknotes, and so everything has to be done digitally and electronically to save us from the virus. And that's just one of so many elements that we're seeing rolled out.
I mean, surely traditional medicine would teach us that, you know, bacteria and viruses could possibly be passed on through direct human contact. Say you sneeze or whatever, you pick up a £5 note, give it to someone else, you possibly pass the virus or a bacteria on like that.
Well, there are many medical professionals and scientists who are disputing the regular concept of what a virus is. And they're stating that whatever this thing is, this disease, it's been misdescribed as a virus, because a virus is not something that could be passed on from human to human. It's an individual process that takes place in the human body, and it represents the body purging toxins that it's taken in from whatever influences, and it's the body getting rid of this product.
But I mean, I've caught the flu, I've caught a cold off people in the past. Why not now?
Well, we don't know for sure that we're catching it off other people, do we? We might have been subjected to the same influences and the same toxins that have caused our bodies to have that reaction. You know, families getting ill at the same time could be getting ill from the same influences. Maybe it's food they're eating. Maybe it's electromagnetic pollution in the home. Maybe it's other things. And it's not regular. It's not members of the family passing the disease on to each other. This is what many medical professionals are saying anyway, that are coming forward now. They're saying that our concept and understanding of what a virus is flawed. And, you know, at best, we might be looking at something that's been mislabeled here.
Okay, so this seems all to be changing with COVID-19. I mean, I can tell you, you know, meeting my cousin a couple of years ago, he was being very apologetic, saying, "Oh, I've got a cold, you know, stay away from me." But, you know, we were chatting, and I find out afterwards, "Oh, I've caught it." You know, it certainly seems like there was something in the air. You know, maybe he's coughing or sneezing, and I caught something off of him. And that's the normal way people have been talking about this. But anyway, so look, where is this heading? That's the interesting thing, isn't it? Because it's not, I mean, I don't want to get too fixated on this virus, because the agenda which it's ushering in seems to be what this is really about, Mark.
Well, it does. And things are just getting so ridiculous now, particularly with this absurd rule of six that we got introduced the other day. Incidentally, on the 9th of September, the 9th of the 9th, which are two inverted sixes. So you've got the three sixes there. They do love playing with their numbers, these people. It's just getting so ridiculous now with all these announcements from Johnson and Hancock, less of the Han. Who takes these people seriously, really, you know? And it feels almost as if they want people to wake up to the fact that this is a monumental scam. It's just being made so ridiculous now. And people are. It's not happening quick enough for my liking, but so many people now are starting to question what the hell is going on with this thing and why it's being dragged on for so long. And I'm hearing anecdotes from people about their mum or their cousin or their next door neighbor who were the most calcified normies at the start of all of this, believing every word the BBC told them, every word the government told them. And even these people are now saying something isn't right about this. It doesn't all add up. So it's almost as if they want people to realize that this is one big hoax. But I do wonder how tied it is to the US election, because every major American election there's been in the past few years, there's been a pandemic which has come along the very same year in the run-up to that election. There are so many examples of this. And looking back to 2017, we had Dr. Anthony Fauci, the chief medical advisor to the American government, stating that this administration, the Trump administration incoming, will have to deal with a major pandemic at some point in this term. And of course, he was speaking from inside knowledge because he knew damn well this thing was being cooked up. So I do wonder whether it's all to do with what's happening in America with Donald Trump. And once this election takes place on the 3rd of November, whether the whole narrative is going to change very quickly. I wonder if the entire world has been plunged into this because they've seen the opportunity to control and subvert all these countries around the world. But ultimately, it's very much based around what's happening in America, and it's very much linked to Donald Trump.
2021 is supposed to be the year of the Great Reset. In other words, international financial architecture, it's all change, apparently.
Well, apparently so. You know, that's one side of the story that we're hearing. We're also hearing from the other side of things about the Nisara and Jisara systems, which are another type of financial reset, but one which is very much in the benefit of the public and the benefit of humanity, so we're told. So I don't know which way it's going to go. We've got two kind of opposing viewpoints being put forward here, depending on which faction in the scene you listen to. Clearly, big changes are on the way next year, but I wonder if they're of the type that many truth and conspiracy researchers have been warning us about. You know, we've been absolutely inundated with doom and gloom this year. Stories of when the 5G gets switched on, we're all going to bake in the radiation that will come from that. People are going to be falling ill. They're apparently going to unleash a new strain of this virus, if that's what it is. And this one's going to be even more deadly than the first one, which wasn't that deadly at all, it turns out. And then we're hearing all these horror stories about mandated vaccines and you're not going to be able to get flights and you're not going to be able to work in certain places until you've had one and you've got to have a COVID passport and all this. But I don't know how much of this is going to come to pass as opposed to just being fear-based propaganda to keep people in terror and keep people compliant and doing what they want them to do.
But I mean, there are some that say that the New World Order have overstretched themselves on this occasion, and actually it's ending up waking far too many people up for them to cope with.
Yeah, they certainly have got audacious with this one, and it's not characteristic of them, because I've been researching what this class does for the past 10 years, and they normally take very covert, sly, incremental steps. So they don't do anything too major in one go. They do it sequentially and progressively. And this is out of character for them, because they've thrown everything they've got at us all at once. So it does seem to represent them either getting too audacious and too arrogant, or getting absolutely desperate and fearing that too many people are going to wake up too quickly with the sharing of information that now goes on. And so they've got to put the final pieces of their plan in place very quickly.
What do you make of Brexit, though? Because some people have commented, and this is quite true, isn't it, that basically we've had the deaths of tens of thousands of Brexit voters, basically the elderly people that voted for Brexit. Now, it might be stretching a point to really connect the two, but it is interesting, isn't it, that this has happened just after the what could be the death knell for Brussels.
Well, it is interesting timing, but one thing I've realised is that this so-called COVID-19 pandemic has been in the planning for many, many years. So it's been known to be coming for a very long time, and it's been known that it would happen in the year 2020. And it was, you know, this whole thing was cooked up way before Brexit became an issue. I've cited examples in movies and TV shows and music videos and magazines going back years and years and years, which indicate foreknowledge of a 2020 pandemic. So, you know, this one is a long time in the planning. And if the Brexit issue ends up ticking a few boxes along the way, I think that's probably a happy bonus for them on top. That's the, you know, the cherry on top of the cake for them.
Anyway, Mark, it's been really interesting hearing your view on all this, but really your, I suppose, main work so far has been dismantling some of the myths about the music industry. We've seen such massive changes from British music really resonating right around the world in the 1980s and 90s. Slowly but surely, you know, that there's things like Top of the Pops suddenly disappears. The music industry seems to have been decimated. And most of the stuff that's being churned out now is almost, you know, it's almost taking the mickey out of what might be, you know, considered some of the best music we've produced in the world here. So what's happened to the music industry? And can you just give us a sort of brief summary of some of the stuff that's in your books about that?
Well, yeah, I've been researching these subjects for the last 10 years, and it's been the foundation of my two books, Musical Truth. And it's been a fascinating path of research, because I've gone all the way back to the early days of the industry, the 1950s, when all the major record labels got going. And in America, you had the emergence of Elvis Presley and rock and roll artists like Bill Haley and the Comets. And then you had in Britain the emergence of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the Who and bands like this. I've looked at the 60s counterculture coming out of America and how that was a massive social engineering operation at the hands of the CIA. Looking at parallels with the UK counterculture scene of the 60s, then later the rave and acid house scene that came out of Britain in the late 1980s, evidence to suggest that that's another social engineering operation. So all these things, and more recently the occult symbolism that's been going into music videos from all the big artists that have been popular the past few years, like Lady Gaga and Rihanna and Jay-Z and Beyonce and Katy Perry and people like this. But really, looking at the music industry in 2020, it makes me wonder whether the architects of all of this, the mind controllers, feel that they're done with it, which is a horrifying thought. But I raised this question in an interview that I did a few weeks ago on an American show. And it just seems to me that they've done so much social engineering and so much societal programming, and they've put the symbolism in there and they've used it to push agendas. And I just wonder if they're done with that aspect of culture now, because there are no real artists that stand out anymore. There are no real scenes or genres. I gave the example on the show of the other week of, you take it back to the 90s and you had, you know, drum and bass and grunge and house music and hip hop. And you take it back a bit further, you had in the 80s, New Romantic, that whole sound, synth pop. You had Two Tone, you had post-punk, new wave, all these different scenes. And we don't seem to have that anymore. We don't have any of these movements or trends that people can relate to. And the artists just all seem very generic, and there's nothing that makes one particularly stand out from another, apart from how dark and occultic their videos can be. And I just wonder if, you know, the engineers of all of this have just decided that they've achieved all they can through the music industry as a tool for programming and indoctrination.
It's interesting, isn't it, how so much of the music in the 60s and 70s, for example, was uplifting, positive vibes, lots and lots of interesting ideas in that music and in the lyrics about sort of freedom and independence. Yet now that all seems to have gone. So I suppose the effect of the music now could even be people searching around, young people searching around for where this, you know, where they get to get the next tune from. It actually has having a sort of demoralizing effect on masses and masses of young people.
Yeah, and I would challenge anyone to name me, let's even say three. I was going to say five songs. Let's whittle it down to three. Three songs in mainstream pop music. So by that, I mean records that were chart hits, that got heavy rotation on radio and on video TV channels, that had any kind of positive uplifting message for humanity in the last 20 years. Let's take it back to the year 2000. So, you know, in previous decades, 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s, I could cite hundreds of examples of songs that delivered a powerful, strong message, and you could really get inside the lyrical content. But in the last 20 years, what has there been? That's not to say this music doesn't get made. And I have a show called The Sound of Freedom, which is a conscious music podcast that consists of just that type of music, meaningful message music from switched on, awakened artists. And I really enjoy collating all of that. But I have to dig deep for these records. I have to know where to look for them because they're not readily available to anyone looking at mainstream outlets. So the music is still being made, but obviously it's being kept from the general public getting to hear it on radio and such. And that's a very sad state of affairs.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because if you create this kind of desert out there, then it also provides the opportunities. It's a bit like the sort of economic situation. And the joblessness, particularly for young people, is it creates an opportunity like they had in the 1930s for some kind of Hitler-like figure to appear on the scene politically. Suddenly then the music, the brakes on the music are released, then the brakes on the economy are released, and everyone feels like, wow, this is a great leader. So I'm a little bit concerned that, you know, this could be a kind of red carpet for fascism in the background here. But look, anyway, Mark, it's been fascinating hearing from you. Can you just wind up with let us know whereabouts we can get the book, what the book is called, etc., and also your music podcast, because I think we could all do with a listen to that.
Well, yeah, I think people are so COVIDed out in these times that they could certainly use some escapism. And from time to time, I get bogged down with all the heavy information and I just have to dive into some uplifting music to, you know, help me make it through the day. So the two books are called Musical Truth Volumes 1 and 2. They're both available on Amazon. I've also just written a novel, a symbolic allegorical novel, which I put out this year called The Cause and the Cure. That's also on Amazon. But if anyone wants to get those books directly from me, they can drop me an email to markdevlinuk@gmail.com and I can send out the signed copies. So the Sound of Freedom podcast is on my Spreaker and my Mixcloud pages. So if you just type in my name to either of those, you should find that. I'm just restarting another show called The Sound of Now, which I used to put out on an FM radio station based in Oxford. But I've been off that station since July. Was it something I said? And so now I'm putting these shows out again on my Spreaker and Mixcloud platforms. And these consist of positive, uplifting, soulful house music, which is a genre that really speaks to me and really helps me through these difficult times. I hope that has an effect on other people in a similar way. And really, for most of this year, I've put the music research on hold because with all this coronavirus nonsense and all this stuff jumping off, I've really felt the responsibility to put all my efforts and all my time and energy into exposing this massive scam. So pretty much all the videos I've put out this year have been on that subject. Very soon, I do want to get back to writing Musical Truth Volume 3, because I've got a whole load of things I still need to say and put out there. But my YouTube channel is called Mark Devlin TV, and I put a new video out every weekend, just giving my thoughts and reflections on where we're at with this whole mess. And I try to deliver an uplifting message each week as well. I don't always find myself in that frame of mind, but if there's positivity to be found, I convey that to people, because there's enough doom and gloom mongers out there telling us we're all screwed and there's nothing but dread and terror in the future. Well, I don't want to add to their number.
No, definitely not. Actually, I think in a way, you know, there is definitely the light at the end of the tunnel is coming closer as the yes. New World Order start to make blunders. I mean, I think that's what that's going on at the moment, and they're overstretching themselves. So also, what about the actual COVID tunes? Because I've come across one or two, Mark. Is there anything you could recommend, specific songs that have been made in the COVID era to express people's rather cynical attitude towards some of these silly rules like mask wearing and that sort of thing?
Well, I would direct people to Media Bear on YouTube. If you go to the Media Bear channel, they do spoof songs which are devastating satire of this whole thing. So they did a cover of Men Without Hats, The Safety Dance, and they called it The Safety Mask. And they've got lyrics like, you know, wear a mask if you want to, or you can leave the mask behind. And they're just mocking the whole idea of mask wearing and how stupid the whole thing is. They did a cover version of I Wear My Sunglasses at Night, which they called I Wear My Face Mask in the Car. And that's got lyrics like, I wear my face mask in the park so I can placate all the Karens in the park, and so I can virtue signal in my neighborhood. So the guys putting these videos together, they understand what's happening. You know, they know the score, and they're just putting it into this absolutely stinging satire. And what's the other one they've got? Oh, they did a cover of Queen, We Will Rock You, but they called it We Will Mock You. And so they're having a go at these Karens that are spreading their fear all over the place. They have a go at Joe Biden. They go in on mask wearers, you know. So Media Bear on YouTube, that's great. And then if you want some really hard-hitting conscious hip-hop, there's a dude called Diesel Automatic, and that's spelled D-I-S-L Automatic. Look him up on YouTube. He's done a few tunes about COVID, and he pulls no punches.
Mark Devlin, hope you don't get demonetized. You haven't been demonetized yet by YouTube, have you?
Well, funny you should say that. I had my first strike just today, They've warned me that two more strikes and I'm off, so it's probably going to happen. I've been preparing myself for this for some time. I've got all my videos on BitChute, so if it happens, it happens. It's happened to everyone else, so why wouldn't it happen to me?
Yep, and also, of course, you can't be allowed to actually make a success of cheering people up in this crazy new world. Anyway, Mark Devlin, thanks very much for joining us.
All right, thanks a lot, man. Cheers.